This is Real Ghost Stories Online.
When we're young, going on adventures, you know, a little kind of like mystery excursions can be fun. You know, when you're a little kid, you kind of make it up. And then once you kind of get to that age of, oh my God, I can drive a vehicle and can somewhat control my life in some ways, you start doing those things. At least I did, and I know a lot of my friends did. And that kind of lives into like almost your early 20s sometimes. I remember kind of going on some little, you know, amateur ghost hunts where just me and some friends would be looking around some cemetery or something and 20-ish, somewhere around there. Anyway, it's fun. It's fun. And then, you know, you get older and things are a little more serious and whatnot. But those are days where you kind of, you know, oh my gosh. But what a lot of times nothing is discovered. It's always like, there's the myth, let's go see it. And then everyone's like, oh, this sucks, let's go to Pizza Hut. That's how a lot of times it works. But in some cases, in some cases, more than that happens. When people come across relics, they come across the very thing they're looking for, the thing that confirms the myth or the legend or whatever happened or was real. And that can be quite startling. It is what happens in our next story. Take a listen. As a young kid growing up in Amherstburg, Ontario, one could not help but hear one of the many ghost stories about the old Texas road. Back in the early 90s, we had a group of kids who decided to investigate all the rumors and happenings of the local area. One of our first areas to investigate was Old Texas Road and the Texas Road Graveyard. We investigated this area several times over our years at high school. I did my best to present them in an organized and comprehensible manner. In writing this, I have decided that it would be best to split the stories about Texas Road from the stories about the Texas Road Graveyard as they share history, but it might get a little too confusing. The Texas Road stories are complicated and involve many events mixed throughout the history of the area. These stories focus on a set of areas along the road, which makes it hard to organize into a single communications thread. It's best to understand that there's a layer of old stories that take place back in the early days of settling the town of Amherstburg, and a layer of new stories that take place in recent history. Texas Road was believed to have started its life as a Waynet Indian trail that led to a sacred Indian graveyard on the edge of the river. Later in the 1700s, as the British started to settle in the area, it became a road that linked the main river road between Fort Amherstburg and Old Sandwich, West Windsor, to the farmlands in McGregor. It was during this time that the eldest of the stories takes place, in which British soldiers, feeling along Texas Road from the American army that laid siege and burned Fort Amherstburg, were betrayed by their Indian allies and slaughtered. Their scalps sold to the Americans, who then occupied the area. There's some confusion of this history for me because the Indian Cemetery is at the end of the middle side road, which is one concession north of Texas Road. Many stories exist today about this road, including stories of an Indian massacre resulting in a mass grave, British soldiers being slaughtered by Indians who betrayed them while fleeing the burning of Fort Amherst, witches being burned at the stake, and many stories involving witchcraft and satanic worship. It was the story of the witches that most intrigued our group. It was said that after the rebuilding of the fort, Fort Madeline, in the early 1800s, during the uncomfortable occupation of the small town, that the local Indians were gathered and placed into their territories. As new land agreements were acquired, the local Indians found themselves with less and less hunting grounds. The local tribes became very hard-pressed for survival in their areas. This led them to depending on trades with the local town for some necessities. Many local stories come from these trading times. One of the popular trades was the services of young Indian maidens. To say it politely, this became a growing problem in the hard times of the town. It's unknown who or how it started. If the wives and the women folk objected to the time and money that was being taken from the town's men, or if the men were accepting services and not paying, and or abusing the Indian maidens. Either way, bad blood quickly developed and the Indian would raid the town to claim their justice. This all led to an intervention by the American law and the church of the time. Several Indian women conducting these trades were arrested and convicted of witchcraft. They were brought to the Texas Road and burned at the stake. Their bodies were left up for a while to dissuade any further attempts to trade. Whether this story is true or not, it inspired several events in later history of the area. In the early 1900s, local groups practicing witchcraft and Satanism chose an isolated area along Texas Road to conduct their ceremonies. It had been a hotspot for these types of events ever since. Every couple of generations, the events pick up and start to happen again until they become a community problem and are dealt with by the town and the law. In the late 1800s, the events started to pick up again. It was said that the original ceremonial area had eroded into the ravine at the end of Texas Road, and that some of it still existed and could be seen, especially the sacrificial altar stone that supposedly still existed in the bottom of the ravine. This is where we started our investigation, to see if we could find the altar stone. Currently, our group was still, there were only two of us. Later, more friends join in. This was our second investigation together, the first being the cursed tree. This went in the early afternoon of a Saturday in the summer, as police heavily patrolled this area at night. We parked our car up the road, walked in, entered the ravine at the old bridge crossing, and looked around the area. The bridge had a square cement foundation that was large enough for a person to walk under. It was about 10 feet wide. The area was littered with satanic graffiti and garbage, a lot of old tires, barbed wire, and other junk. Nothing very interesting. So we decided to walk further along the ravine. The ravine was covered in a canopy made from the surrounding trees. It was a very pleasant place and felt very old and peaceful. The ravine twisted behind Sutton Creek Forest and became wider. About a mile and a half along, we found several large stones that had fallen into the ravine. And the forest ground above were also old stones. They're large, round rocks, the size of giant pumpkins. They did look like they formed a rough circle at one time. In the middle was a large, flat slab stone half buried in the ravine wall. At first, it did not look like much, but there was a cavity behind it that allowed you to see the side of the stone hidden by the dirt. On the stone were several carvings of pentagrams and crosses, along with letters and symbols. Many of the carvings were half under dirt. All appeared to have been there for many years, as they were weathered down. We had found the altar stone. We wanted to return later with a camera to take some pictures, but as we left the ravine and emerged from the bridge, we found a police car was waiting for us. He'd seen our car down the street and was waiting for us to return. He asked us what we were doing, and we were honest and told him. He told us not to come back or he'd arrest us for trespassing next time. This was our first run-in with the police, by far from our last. This held us off for the rest of the summer, but we made plans to return later that fall. Later that fall, we did return. It was on a Saturday morning this time, just before Halloween. We drove to the area and got ready to park the car, but we saw another police car and decided to leave the area. We discovered that there are many cop cars patrolling the area frequently, most likely because of Halloween and Devil's Night. So we left and returned to my friend's house. We had a party that night with a bunch of our friends, got to talking about the altar stone. Many of the kids did not believe us that it was still out there, that it existed at all. But a few were interested. It was decided, against my better judgment and a few others, that we would venture out into the forest after dark when the cops were less likely to see us and get our pictures of the altar stone. It was around midnight when five of us set off in my friend's car with another friend's Kodak instant camera to snap a picture of the altar. You remember shaking the pictures to develop them? Yeah, good times. Well, midnight was not a good time. We drove by the bridge area, and it was still swarming with cops in the area. They were using their spotlights to search the bridge and graveyard nearby. So we peeled off and decided that we'd wait. After about 2 hours of driving around, we decided to return. Cops were gone, but now it was 2 a.m., and the area was creepy, especially since it was dark night. We drove by the bridge again slowly. As we looked around to see the ravine, we all quickly noticed a dark figure standing in the bushes. The figure was cloaked all in black and had a pale green veil, an evil face with an extended nose. It was scary. The driver stopped the car as the figure jumped out in front. Two other figures jumped from the shadows and landed on the trunk and roof of the car. They were screaming and banging the car, and we all screamed. The driver hit the horn and started to drive off. The figure in front jumped on the hood. Then as we sped up, all the figures jumped off the car. I could see them behind us in the red glow from the taillights as they all rolled along the road. One figure was wearing Nike running shoes. The big white Nike swoosh gave it away. It was just a bunch of misfit kids, still scared the hell out of us. They're probably the reason the cops were there earlier. With the witch scared out of us, we drove home and decided that we would return after Halloween, and after all the misfits got their pranks out for the season. We returned about a week later in November, again at night, and again with my friend driving. This time we were partying at his house, which we did often. It was about 2 a.m., and we all had just returned from one of our first late-night drive-thrus at Taco Bell, a new concept at the time. There were five of us again in the car, four guys and a girl. We passed the graveyard on the way to the bridge area, but there was a cop car sitting at the graveyard. So we passed by and kept going. We decided that we'd return later around 3 a.m. to see if the cop was still there. And if he was not, we were going to do a drive-by drop-off. Two of us guys and the girl would go into the forest. Driver and her scaredy cat friend would stay in the car. Hopefully, if he ever read this, he knows I say it with warm regards, as he was a good friend, even though he had the constitution of a canary bird. And regardless, he followed us through hell and back, even though I'm sure it took many years off of him. My friend would give us 45 minutes to get down the ravine and then drive back again slowly to pick us up. If we missed the first pickup, he would return in 20 minutes and try again. If we missed him again, he would park out by the old farmhouse down the road and wait for us to come to him. Crafty plan, made good sense at the time, except it was 3 a.m. We were about to enter one of the creepiest forests in the area. Well, we returned, and there would be no police to be found, so three of us quickly jumped out of the car and all made a dash for the bridge edge to climb down into the ravine. It was very cool. The night air seemed to pool in the bottom of the ravine. The forest held a slight wisp of fog around the bases of the trees, and in some parts, the fog poured over the edge into the ravine. It was hard to see your footsteps, but the moonlight was bright, and it was a clear night. We could see our way along the ravine floor, and we only had about 1.5 miles to go. The forest was quiet. It seemed that we were the noisiest things around. Each step sent out crackling leaves echoing through the night forest. Quickly, we realized that 1.5 miles was easily reached in the daylight, but at night, with shadows and unsure footings, we're going to be real hard pressed to reach the altar stone and get back to the bridge in 45 minutes. So we started to run as well as we could along the ravine floor. About 10 minutes into the run, an explosion of leaves and thrashing happened right in front of me. I jumped to the far side of the ravine to see two yellow eyes dart up at me from the base of a tree. We all had that silent heart attack feeling, but quickly caught our breaths as we realized that it was just a raccoon, startled and bolting up a tree. We all stopped for a few seconds to catch our breaths and our wits. We thought about turning around, but we really wanted a picture of the altar stone. So we continued with the belief that the stones were just shortly ahead. After about another 10 minutes, we figured we were close and started to walk the ravine, looking for the large stones, but we could not find them. We continued for another 5 or so minutes, and we started to hear footsteps from the forest above us. They were odd, not human-like. We all froze, still like statues. All my senses were focused on my hearing, straining to confirm the next crunching sound of a leaf, trying to pinpoint where the figure was. 1 minute passed as we stood motionless and breathless. At the distance, about 40 or so feet away, a white horse moved in from the shadows. It was peaceful looking, but seemed bothered. The horse moved through a cluster of trees and then disappeared. It was the ghost horse that roams the area around the Texas Road graveyard. It moved to the mist very gracefully, with just a note of an eerie sensation in its movements. It was very emotional and created a very surreal scene. I had seen this horse as a young child when the Sutton Creek farm had offered horseback riding with trails with Sutton Creek Forest. The riding instructor immediately cut back to the barns and ended the trail ride when we all saw it. He was terribly frightened, and all the horses were pressed up along the barns away from the trees. We were now terribly frightened and spent several moments in awe. With all our time spent, we no longer had time to look for the stones. We had to turn back and rush back to the bridge to catch our ride out of the spooky forest. Going back was harder than going forward. The fog was settling in thicker towards the bridge, and the moonlight was not cutting through the trees like it did earlier. The three of us stayed close together as we rushed down the ravine. After about 20 minutes, we realized that we were going to miss our first opportunity for a ride. We'd already been about 45 minutes in the forest. We were now rushing along the ravine and did not seem to be more than half the way back. Worse yet, with the fog closing in, we were quickly losing our sense of distance and direction. The only hope I had was that the ravine only ran in a line and that the walls became steeper and closer as we got to the bridge. But the walls were still wide. We were now making worse time in the thickening fog. We stopped for a brief second to catch our breaths. We realized that we had another 20 minutes to get to the bridge with a second attempt for our pickup. With plenty of time, we moved more cautiously along as not to trip on the branches or obstacles that littered the bottom of the ravine. Soon, about 10 minutes passed, and we were starting to move into the area of the ravine where the walls steepened. The bridge was only about a mile at most. We all stopped frozen once more. This time a large bellow of a creepy laugh echoed through the trees. It was a deep man's voice that rattled through our bones. He laughed again. We have guests. We instantly realized that we were not alone in the woods and that in our company was persons who not only were creeping around the forest at night, but also were willing to laugh loudly in a very creepy voice to scare us. We were in deep trouble. I knew they probably knew where we were and most likely knew the forest a lot better than us, so we instantly bolted up the side of the ravine furthest from the voice and took off through the foggy forest. I led the way knowing that there was a farm field full of corn not too far away. Cornfields are a good place to hide, except after watching Children of the Corn, of course. We could hear several people chasing us. They were not far behind. One of my friends was a young girl who was almost hyperventilating from fear. I thought about hiding and letting them pass, but with her suffering and huffing like that, they would find us without a doubt. After a few seconds, we came to the cornfield. We busted into the corn, and after a few feet, I stopped, realizing we could stomp down a large section of corn. Our chasers would immediately see it and follow it into the cornfield. So I stopped and directed my friends back out of the field and down a narrow gap between the forest and the corn. We moved slowly and quietly and kept low. This allowed us to catch our breaths and make a break for the road. We stopped briefly as the people chasing us passed through the cornfield. They were far away, but we could hear them stomping down the corn looking for us. We continued to move along the tree line towards the road. The road was only about a mile or so away, but we would have missed our second pickup, and our friend would now be parked near the farmhouse at the end of the road. This put him about 2 miles up the road on the far end from the cornfield. It was going to be a long walk, especially walking along the cornfield in the soft mud. It clung to our boots like cement blocks. After a few minutes, we heard the people chasing us turn back to the forest. They were shouting that we probably weren't in the cornfield at all. Fearing that they would soon pick up on our muddy tracks, we moved out into the cornfield to walk along the rows and cross through them several rows at a time before walking back along with the rows. I wanted to get to the road first, so I walked with the rows a lot longer than I did across them. I figured if nothing else, we would walk along the road. If a cop came, we could tell him about the evil people in the corn and trees. After about 20 minutes or so, we broke the cornfield, stood at the edge of the big ditch. Our legs were sore and tired. We used sticks to scrape brick-sized globs of mud from our boots. Finding the road was a relief, but we were all still very freaked out about the people in the cornfield. We'd not heard from them in a while and had no idea where they were. We started walking along the ditch side towards the meeting point with our friend. We were looking for a good point to cross the ditch. We started into the ditch at a spot we thought to be crossable. When we saw a set of headlights moving down the road, I looked at the headlights and realized that they were large and square. They were truck headlights and not the headlights of a cop car or our friend's car. The girl in our group thought it a good idea to flag them down, but both us guys thought it was a bad idea. We had no idea who they were. Standing on the edge of the ditch, we watched as the lights got closer. Then about a half mile down the road, they grinded to a stop. It was a dirt road. The truck stopped in front of the bridge and several people passed through the headlights. I could hear them laughing and quickly realized it was our pursuers from the woods. We quickly stumbled back up the edge of the ditch and fled into the corn as the truck roared up the road. We all dropped to the ground as the truck slowed by the edge of the cornfield. The truck had floodlights and everything, and they were looking into the cornfield for us. They were drinking and tossing cans of empty beer into the cornfield. We stayed still as they passed, and the truck spun its tires and zipped around and raced back to the ditch area. We quickly got up and ran along the edge of the cornfield towards our pickup location. The truck did not return, but we no longer had seen the headlights and worried that they may have turned them off, so we stayed just in the cornfield. We made it through the cornfield and out into the farmyard where we saw our friends parked in his car on the farmer's access drive back in from the road. We ran to the car and banged on the doors. We scared the hell out of them, but they did let us in. We quickly told them of the other crazy people in the forest. We quickly left the area and did not return that year. By the way, it took us the better part of an afternoon to clean the mud out of the car. We never did get our picture. The next spring, we had bad rains and the whole area flooded badly. Many of the roads were washed out for almost a week. Construction crews worked on the drainage for the Texas Road area and many of the concessions around. They dug out the ravine and completely changed its shape. We returned the following summer in the day. We walked the top edge of the ravine but could not find the altar stone. But we did find dead animals tied to many of the trees near the bridge. Several days later, the paper printed that several dead or near-dead animals were found tied to trees and telephone poles along Texas Road and one of the other concession roads nearby. It mostly consisted of roadkill, but there were a few cats, dogs, even birds. It was very disturbing. A year after that, they closed the road for the bridge repairs and never reopened the road. Over the next couple of years, we tried to look around the local area, hoping to find where they dumped the rocks and stones, but were never able to locate the altar stone again. I walked along the old road a couple years ago. The bridge has not changed too much, but the area is now completely grown over and you can't see much in the ravine. The forest is now much smaller than I remember. I think the farmers have extended their fields into this area too. The graveyard now has a fence around it. The Sutton Creek farm closed long ago and has been vacant land ever since. Closing the road did stop the crazy events that happened there, so I'm glad to see that the papers have finally stopped printing bad events that happened in that area. I wish I would have gotten a picture of the altar stone, but it was simply not worth trying again.
This is Real Ghost Stories Online.
Want a commercial-free experience of the show with access to the world's largest audio archive of ghost stories? Sign up at Apple Podcasts right now and try it for 3 days free. GhostPodcast.com or Patreon.com/RealGhostStories.